And let us bow together in prayer. May the words of my mouth and may the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. It is the first Sunday of November, and in this congregation and in most Presbyterian congregation, that means one thing. There's going to be a sermon about stewardship. It's the one Sunday of the year when your pastor is actually expected to talk about money and is expected in some nice, very soft-pedaled, diplomatic way to point out to the congregation that it does cost money to run the church program, both locally and in its mission to others here in this community and way beyond. And the only way to accomplish this is for people to agree to underwrite the budget for the church's program for the upcoming year. We know it has to be done. This whole business of making the pitch. But nobody wants either the preacher or the stewardship chair to come on too strong in this regard. You know, there were times in the past when many of our churches, I think true of this one as well, that they carried on a visitation program where we would send people out in twos to visit each member of the congregation and try to solicit a pledge from them. In fact, I used to train callers for that task. I would tell callers that when they went into a home, not to sit next to each other, but rather to sit around whoever is the person being called upon to kind of encompass that individual. And then the second thing was to notice if there were any pictures that might be on display, usually of family members, and get the visited one to talk about those family members. Every person likes to talk about children, grandchildren, etc., with delight. And by now, the visited one has been warmed up for the caller to make the pitch. And even with these icebreakers, which were to make the visit more pleasant, at least for the visited one, few people really like making those house calls, though later they would concede that it really wasn't as bad as what they had expected, and that in fact, in most cases, it really was a very pleasant conversation that was carried on. But it didn't seem to increase the giving. And soon churches were giving up on that technique of soliciting pledges. And so house calls were eliminated, and a stewardship letter and pledge card were sent out. I'm told one should be in the mail to you, probably in your hands by Thursday or Friday. Nancy shaking her head. Many people probably feel relieved as well that the pastor's stewardship sermon is almost always on a communion Sunday and therefore will be shorter than on other Sundays. And then, too, many people rejoice that in talking about stewardship, the preacher will no doubt be talking about not only giving money, but giving time and talent as well. In fact, many people hope the preacher will really focus on those two areas for the greater part of the sermon because they are pretty sure that they do pretty well when they add up how much time and talent they're offering to the congregation. And if they do pretty well in two out of three, that's not bad. Then there are the cynics. or some people would call them the realists, who are quick to comment that the stewardship sermon isn't going to change anybody's plans to give anyway. People have known what they plan to give for some time, same as last year, or maybe the same as the last 5 years, though their income has probably gone up, and the stewardship sermon is really just a ritual that we go through. Though I do remember 1 year when I was in Merrick, the two members of the congregation said to me after the sermon that they had upped their pledge as a result of the sermon I had preached. You know, all week long I tried to find that sermon in my file, and I couldn't find it for this morning to see whether it still has that kind of magical touch to it. And yet, in talking about stewardship, we are, of course, speaking on a theme that is a major theme in the Bible, and particularly in the ministry of Jesus. Now, for those of you who like statistics, let me throw out a few statistics. There are roughly 2,350 verses in the Bible that speak about money and possessions. If you doubt me, ask Richard. He probably has checked it out. Specifically in the New Testament, it should be noted that one of every 7 verses in the first 3 Gospels and about 1/3 of the parables and 15% of everything that Jesus said spoke about money and possessions. That's twice as much as prayer and faith combined. Now you ask, why is it so important? Because there's a fundamental connection between a person's spiritual life and his attitudes and action concerning money and possessions. We Christians speak in terms of stewardship because in seeing ourselves as stewards, we declare that that money that we have is really a gift. We are entrusted with it. And the question really becomes, how well do we do with what we have been entrusted with? What has been put into our hands? Do we deal with it wisely? Now, I must say personally that I have always found it harder to ask for money, though I have never found it hard to give. I've watched those TV evangelists and their pitch, and it's turned me off. And yet, deep down within me, there's also a bit of envy that the whole thing seems to work for them. That there are people whose only connection with the church and with the church's ministry is geared to sitting for a half hour or maybe an hour in front of a TV set and watch a well-put-together program that's geared to entertaining more than it is to making disciples of Jesus Christ. And yet those people will faithfully write out their checks and send them even when some of those TV evangelists have been involved in fraud and money-skimming deals, whereas the local church, with its very personal approach to ministry, continues to stagger along, just hoping to make ends meet. I remember also a church that I attended one Sunday evening back in St. Paul, Minnesota, when I was still a teenager. It was Pledge Sunday. And at that evening service, they had an adding machine in front of the church. And as members' names were called, the members needed to indicate out loud and before the entire congregation how much they would be pledging for the next year. And here I was only a visitor. I tried to creep under the pew. I remember also that the pledge total would then be posted in front of the church in big numerals next to the proposed budget. It was almost similar to the Jerry Lewis telethon. And the doors at Simpson Memorial Christian Missionary Alliance Church were locked. I kid you not, until the goal was reached. And that meant that some people would change their pledge and raise it while sitting there that night. And darn it, it worked! Well, we Presbyterians are too sophisticated to use any of the techniques of either the TV evangelists or even Simpson Memorial Christian Missionary Alliance Church of St. Paul. Well, you know, a week ago yesterday, Sean Moran and Jason Neal and myself attended the October meeting of the Presbytery. And a major component of that day was an hour presentation by the stewardship team that came down from Hudson River Presbytery. A full hour. And as I was preparing this morning's message, I gave some consideration to some of the ideas from that 1 hour presentation that I feel deserve reflection. And here is one to reflect on. I like this one. People do not give to the church because it has needs. People give to the church because it meets needs. That's so good, I'm going to repeat it. People do not give to the church because it has needs. People give to the church because it meets needs. How good are we at meeting needs? Are we meeting the needs of those who worship here? I believe we do a pretty good job of meeting the needs of our worshiping communities, and I think we do a pretty good job reaching out to the immediate community. Think of the fact that we really are a home to several AA groups, and I use that word wisely. We are a home to them. And our mission committee has designated that funds be given to several agencies and institutions that address certain needs within our larger community. Here we are with a congregation of only 49 members, plus some very active non-members who do a very excellent job. And to put a plug in here, our newly initiated musical series with our first two programs very well attended indicate we're also meeting a felt need within the community. In the story in which Jesus draws attention to giving practices of both rich people and a widow, he did not put down those who gave out of their abundance, even as she gave out of her limited income. Rather, he called attention to the fact that each one must look at his or her own giving to see if it speaks to concrete fashion, in very concrete fashion, to who they are. When we make commitments in life, they entail our financial commitments as well. Let's be so crass as to phrase it, put your money where your mouth is. Once again, you're offered this week the opportunity to sort out priorities and commitments in your life. Sort out the things that are really important to you. I'm not going to challenge you this morning to give more. You need to decide for yourself whether that's a challenge you need to hear from God, not from me. No, my challenge to you is simply to take this matter very seriously. Take time to pray about it. think through priorities for yourself and for your family. Is your commitment to the mission of Jesus Christ, both locally and throughout the world, attested to by the way you support that mission and allow it to happen? Nothing more really needs to be said. Let us bow together in prayer. Oh God, our checkbooks and our receipts provide the record for ourselves and for our loved ones of where our commitments lie. Grant that in the course of this week, that as decisions are made concerning our commitments, our financial commitments to the ministry of Jesus Christ, grant that we might be serious in our intentions. Amen.